William Again. Written by Rick Mulcrompton and read by Martin Jarvis.
Chapter 1. What delayed the great man? William, taking his character as a whole, was not of the artistic genre. He had none of the shrinking sensitiveness and delicate imaginativeness of the true artist. But the fact remains that this summer he was impelled by some inner prompting to write a play. The idea had been growing in his mind for some time. He had seen plays acted by the Village Amateur Dramatic Society, which was famous more for a touching reliance on the prompter than for any real histrionic talent. William had considered them perfect. He had decided after their last performance to go on the stage. But none of his friends could inform him of the preliminary steps necessary for getting on the stage. It is true that the man in the boot shop, whose second cousin was a scene shifter in a provincial music hall, had promised to use his influence. But when William was told the next week that the second cousin had been dismissed for appearing in a state of undeniable intoxication and insisting on accompanying the heroine onto the stage, he felt that all hopes from that direction must be abandoned. It was then that he had the brilliant idea. He would write a play himself and act in that. William had great confidence in his own powers. He had no doubts whatever of his ability to write a play and act in it. If he couldn't go on the stage, he'd go on a stage. Surely no one could object to that. All he'd want would be some paper and ink and a few clothes. Surely his family, bent as they always were on clouding his moments of purest happiness, couldn't object to that. "Just ink and paper and a few old clothes," he said wistfully to his mother. She eyed him with a mistrust that was less the result of a suspicious nature than of 11 years' experience of her younger son. "Won't pencil do?" she said.
"Pencil?" he said scornfully. "Did Shakespeare or the man what wrote The Red Gang, well, did they write in pencil?"
Mrs. Brown, having no knowledge of the subject, shifted her point of attack. "What sort of clothes will you want?" she said.
"Oh, just clothes," said William vaguely.
"Yes, but what sort?"
"How can I tell," said William irritably, "till I've wrote the play?"
William's family long remembered the silence and peace that marked the next few afternoons. During them, William, outstretched upon the floor of the summer house, wrote his play with liberal application of ink over his person and clothes and the surrounding woodwork. William was not of that class of authors who neglect the needs of the body. After every few words, he took a deep draught from a bottle of orange ale that stood on his right, and a bite from an ink-coated apple on his left. He had laid in a store of apples and sweets and chocolates under the seat of the summer house for his term of authorship. Every now and then he raised a hand to his frowning brow in thought, leaving upon it yet another imprint of his ink-sodden fingers. "Where is he?" said his father, in a hushed wonder at the unwonted peace. "He's in the summer house, writing a play," said his wife.
"I hope it's a nice long one," said her husband.
William had assembled his cast and assigned them their parts. Little Molly Carter was to be the heroine, Ginger the hero, Henry the hero's friend, Douglas a crowd of outlaws. William himself was to be the villain, stage manager, and prompter. He handed them their parts with a lofty frown. The parts were in a grimy exercise book.
"It's all wrote out," he said. "You just learn it where it says your names. Molly's Lady Elsabina."
"Elsabina isn't a name I've ever heard," said that lady pertly.
"I didn't say it was, did I?" said William coldly. "I shouldn't be surprised if there was lots of names you'd never heard of. And Ginger is Sir Rufus Archibald Green, and Henry is the Hon Lord Leopold, and I'm Carlo Rupino, a villain."